Please enjoy this previously recorded segment.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today our guest is Catherine Lampson, Senior Vice President and Chief Administrative Officer at MEMIC. Today we're going to be discussing how the Million Women Mentors Program acted as the catalyst for her and her team at MEMIC to create a mentoring program that emphasizes STEM work within insurance and provides MEMIC employees with an opportunity to connect with coworkers in a mentor-mentee fashion. Catherine, thank you so much for being on today's show.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be on your show. This is exciting.
Well, I am actually really excited about this show as well, because when you and I first connected, you know, my thought for the show was completely different. And once we spent some time talking and you started telling me about this mentorship program that MEMIC is offering and all the work you're doing within this space, it just hit me that this is what we need to talk about, because what you're doing at MEMIC, what your team has accomplished, even though we're still in the very early and foundational stages, I think is so cool and is going to be helpful for other employers, you know, throughout the country. So thank you again. Catherine, I think another aspect, not just about what you've done at MEMIC, but also how you got to be in your role at MEMIC is a really important part of your story. Can you provide our listeners with a little bit of information about your professional background? Because I think a lot of listeners are like, how does Tawny find these people? And why should I listen to Catherine about this topic? And really, I like to focus on everyone has such a different story to how they get into these leadership positions to effectuate change. I think yours is really interesting.
Well, I don't know if it's all that interesting, but my story is my story. I grew up in this area and had an opportunity to go to college in Portland. And I did an internship while I was in college and was placed with a woman, one of the only really high-level officers, women officers in Greater Portland at the time. And I worked for Maine Savings Bank as an intern one summer. And unbeknownst to me, I made a great connection and relationship with my boss. And she was very inspirational to me. For a young kid who was sort of wet behind the ears, didn't know what she wanted to do and didn't have a plan other than what's going to happen on Friday night, I really had to buckle down, do really good work, make a good impression, and sort of think about the future beyond the weekend. This particular woman, her name was Marilyn, she really gave me perspective. She took me under her wing. She has pushed me to do things that I wouldn't have stepped forward to do. I would have sat back and watched somebody else do it, knowing full right well that I could probably do it just as well, maybe better, and most certainly faster. But I didn't have a lot of confidence. And I didn't come from a family that was pushing people to have a lot of confidence, especially the girls. And so I spent that summer with her. The fall came. She offered me a job. I went to work for her. And I worked for her for 11 years in various roles. And she became my mentor. We didn't call it that. We were friends. It's been, you know, more than 30 years. Closer to 40. And we have remained friends.
I think that's one of the really cool parts about your story too, is having this connection, mentor, sponsor, and we can use all the different terms that, you know, that people use right now. But one thing that I hear from so many people that ties between a good mentor is that not just longevity, but also the fact that it becomes personal too, that, you're able to open up and talk about more than just what's going on in work. And, you know, I know that one of my mentors that I've had for the last 20 years at this point in time, you know, similarly there for children's birthdays and deaths of spouses and parents and all of those things, which you see the real person. And that plays such a big role in having, I believe, an effective relationship from a mentor-mentee perspective.
That is so true. You know, we didn't call it mentoring back then. We were friends. And frankly, she was my first sponsor. Because when it was time for me to move on, I don't think that I would have had the confidence to apply for another job at another bank. And she basically tapped me on the shoulder and said, you need to do this. You're ready. It's time for you to go. There's nothing more for you. And, you know, when she said that, I was thinking in my head, oh my word, I must have not done a very good job. But it wasn't that at all. She was looking out for my best interest. And, you know, it was time to go and it was time to get out of my comfort zone. And being pushed like that, it's a little scary, but opportunities present themselves when you open your eyes and open your mind. So that worked out well. I spent the next period of time working in healthcare. And I was very fortunate. I'm a very lucky woman. I land in the right places. I went to work in healthcare because I thought as an HR professional, that's really at that time where the rubber meets the road. That's where all the exciting cases are. That's where all the exciting movement for HR professionals would be. We had just come off, you know, the issue with AIDS in the workplace. And now we were talking about sexual harassment in the workplace and there was trainings to be done. And not that bad things were happening around me, but it was exciting to be part of that movement. And again, in healthcare, you have three shifts, credentialing, things that I wasn't familiar with. So I looked at it as a learning opportunity. And I worked for a vice president, a man. His name is Mike, and he showed me how to do things. He put me into committees and activities that I had basically no experience with, but had great leadership abilities, I guess, so that I would learn. And he would push me to do things that I didn't feel confident per se with. And I became very proficient at those things over time. He turned out to be my sponsor. And to this day, when he comes back to Maine, he always looks me up to see where I am and what I'm doing. And we have truly remained friends. And so that worked out really well. I had the opportunity to move up in the organization. I was doing work at the foundation level. I, you know, had the opportunity to be part of a sort of a quasi-startup organization. There was a laboratory at the time and it was growing and, you know, acquiring other labs. And it was just fun and exciting. And I had somebody who sponsored me and reached out for me and gave me opportunities to present myself and what I could do. And it was very exciting. My personality is such that I fly under the radar a little bit. So having a sponsor was very good for me. And it was great for my career. I didn't really plan on leaving there. I never anticipated that I would move on to another organization. I was sort of happy. I had had some challenges in my personal life and my work family was wonderful to me, but an opportunity did come. One that I never expected, and from networking, frankly. My friends from banking that I had met many years before said, there's an opportunity, and I think you should consider it. And one thing led to another, and I went on the interview, and frankly, I think about that interview often because I was full of myself that day, and sat there with the CEO and had a wonderful conversation and was quasi-interested. And after the conversation was over, I was 100% interested in that opportunity and wanted it. And in fact, I remember thinking to myself halfway through the conversation, oh, you better straighten up and fly right, girl, because this is really important and you need to make a really good impression. And so it worked out. And there was my next sponsor. I didn't know it that day, but he became my next sponsor. And, you know, he showed me the ropes, you know, every afternoon he would come by and give me, I used to call it my insurance lesson. and he would give me my insurance lesson and in great detail and explain how the operation worked, what was the most important thing, you know, where we needed to focus our business, how we were going to grow our business. And it was a wonderful experience. I was fortunate to sit next to the CEO and the CFO. What better place for the HR person to be?
Absolutely.
It was a great experience. And so my career sort of launched there. You know, when I was interested in, you know, finishing a degree, getting certifications, he was completely supportive of that. And in fact, encouraged it. Because I said at the time that I wanted my title changed. From the time I got there until, well, to today, I work with all men. My team is all men and me. And as they were moving ahead and their titles were advancing and so forth, I wanted mine to do that too. And I spoke to him about that. And he said, well, if you do this, this, and this, you can have that too. And I said, is that it? Basically, is that it? He said, yeah, that's it. So I quietly went away, did all those things that he listed out and went back and a few months later and said, here it is. You told me to do this. I did it. And he was very surprised, I think, by the look on his face and very supportive. And he sort of moved me along, gave me more responsibilities, things that didn't necessarily align with human resources. So I had an opportunity to get involved with other things, which was frankly very exciting. And I still am responsible for those things now.
One of the things that I think I definitely identify with your story, and I think a lot of people identify with, is difficulties in self-marketing. I mean, when you talk about accomplishments, and it's tough to talk about the accomplishments that you've had as an individual and making sure that they don't go unnoticed and they're being recognized. And I think a sponsor and a mentor is one of the great aspects of that, helping you and reminding you that something that maybe in your mind wasn't a success or what you felt was a success because you already had that expectation, they help to ground you more and remind you that this isn't something that everyone's doing or that you should be more proud than maybe you are. I think it's so cool to hear your story and, you know, going from three different, very different, but highly regulated industries between banking and healthcare and now insurance. I mean, for those listeners who may be joining us who don't know what MEMIC does, can you give us just a little bit of background, you know, the quick overview of what MEMIC does in the insurance industry?
Well, the quick story is, you know, in 1990, early 90s, there was a workers' comp crisis in the state of Maine. And workers' comp insurance carriers were pulling out of the state. The costs were through the roof, and it wasn't a sustainable system. The then governor, John McKernan, put a Blue Ribbon Commission together, and ultimately MEMIC was formed. MEMIC is Maine Employers Mutual Insurance Company. That was its long title then. It's a company that is a mutual company providing workers' comp to, at that time, Maine businesses, which definitely needed it, and safety services. We really, our niche in the market is that we have one of the best credentialed loss control services division in our industry. So our safety management consultants are assigned to businesses to help them reduce injuries, create a safer workplace, and hence cost less for them to do business. And we've been very successful at that. So we are a niche company selling workers' comp. In the year 2000, we, for the most part, insure most of the main market. So when you are insuring 67% of the market, there's not a lot of room for growth in the state of Maine. So we created another company outside the state of Maine, and we are holding licenses in all the states. So we can do business in all the states. We are predominantly an East Coast company. So our offices range from Florida to upstate New York. And we are providing the same services that have been well received and advantageous for Maine business throughout the country.
Thanks, Catherine. With that, we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMA, career.com, and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Catherine Lampson, Senior Vice President and Chief Administrative Officer at MEMC. And we're discussing the work that MEMC has done to create an effective mentorship program. And prior to the break, we got a general understanding of what MEMC does and what led Catherine into this role at MEMC. I mean, insurance, you think about the fact that, okay, so you've got a lot of people sitting behind desks, it's corporate. But when you and I were talking earlier, before we started the program, I mean, something that you educated me on was the fact that STEM plays a really big role in insurance. And in my mind, I was probably thinking math, yeah, actuarial jobs. But in fact, there's a lot more to it. Can you explain to our listeners kind of more generally the number of STEM careers and the different ways that can take you within the insurance industry?
Well, as you know, I'm really passionate about this because I think insurance is a great business, especially for women. It's the best kept secret. And my colleagues will laugh when I say this, but insurance is a pretty sexy business for women, especially in the STEM careers. So science, technology.
I tell you what, if you don't have a position in marketing by the end of this, they're going to give you another role and you're going to be in the marketing team too.
Well, science, technology, engineering, math are sprinkled and peppered in every division in our company. And our, you know, let's face it, we're sort of a old traditional organization being insurance. Insurance has been around for hundreds of years. So, you know, it's important that we recognize that, you know, some of the what people would, young people especially, think of as sexy jobs and exciting jobs, they do exist in insurance. We are always, always looking at the science and the research that goes along with creating a safe work environment. if you think about a manufacturing plant and how they operate, we are always looking at the data that supports those operations and how people move in those operations. Think about ergonomics as it relates to something in manufacturing. We are always looking at the science and the data to see how to best create whatever the product is in the safest fashion. So science plays a big, big part in that. Technology is where it's at. You know, we are, as a not a huge organization, as a smaller organization, we look at technology to keep up with sort of the big boys in the field. But we are doing really well and now starting to create our own applications and so forth for technology. So our IT department is creating models and apps right now that can be used in the future for workers' comp. Engineering is peppered in a variety of different places in the facilities area. We have an electrician on staff. We have computer engineers, you know, high tech engineering, software developers, and so forth in our company, and it's growing. That's the future. So science, the technicians, the engineering, and math, my goodness, math is what we do. We evaluate risk. We're looking at how much risk it is to insure any business. So the evaluation of that, the analysis of that, you've got to use the technology, the data warehousing that we have. We have a huge initiative right now going on with data analytics and data governance. So all of those STEM related positions exist in insurance. And it's a great opportunity to basically look at a problem in your company, use the data and the analytics that are available to you in your company, as well as to incorporate outside data and analytics to find a solution to a problem.
It sounds really interesting as well, because in addition to having, you know, doing the science and the technology aspect of all this, you're learning about a multitude of different industries. What's the safest way to package this box, to build this house? So you get to work with your clients and the different industries that they focus in to determine the safest, not just safest, but also creating efficiencies for them to continue to operate. So I think the learning about the different industries and how operations works, you know, throughout the country becomes a really interesting aspect of it as well.
It is. It's exciting to see.
So, I mean, when we're talking about how much and how varied the STEM careers within insurance are, let's talk about, you know, your awareness and passion for the Million Women Mentor program and how that came to your radar and how maybe that acted as a catalyst for what MEMIC's doing now.
I happened upon Million Women Mentors quite accidentally. I was in DC to attend a conference for Million Women Mentors. We were along with two of my colleagues, we were there and it was an all-day conference, STEM related mentorship opportunities were being discussed and connections were being made. And sitting on our table was a magazine, and it was called State of the States. And inside the magazine on each page, in alphabetical order, was all the Million Women Mentors activities that were happening in each state. So, of course, I grabbed the book and flicked it to Maine, but there was no page for Maine. And so, you know, I was sitting flanked by my two colleagues, and I said, hey, check this out. And they said, we don't have a page. So we waited till the break, and the woman that was in charge of the Million Women Mentors movement, her name is Sheila Boynton from Tennessee. She is an engineer by background. I went up to Sheila and I introduced myself, talked a little bit about the program and said, basically, how come Maine doesn't have a page? And she said, well, nobody has volunteered to do it. Would you like to do it?
Sometimes I like to call that being that voluntold. You're the one who spoke up. So guess
exactly.
what?
Exactly.
So in charge.
That's exactly how it happened. And I looked over my shoulder at my two colleagues and I was thinking to myself, I can't do one more thing. And the two of them were saying, do it, do it, do it. So I said, basically, I said, if I agree to this, then we have to have a partnership and the three of us will do this. And so we agreed to do that, take on the introduction of the movement, because it's you know, it's all volunteerism, and introduce the Million Women Mentors movement in Maine. So we went back, sort of get up our, you know, our thoughts and started to build our network. So the first thing we did was, of course, call all our friends and say, we'd like to have you for lunch and we'd like to introduce this movement. We'd like to provide you with some data and some facts from the Million Women Mentors movement that shows how women are doing in business, how their pay structures compares to their male colleagues, how their advancement is happening or not happening, as the case may be, in various industries, and what opportunities there are for STEM-related careers in the various industries, and then what is the pay difference between STEM careers and regular careers? And it was pretty substantial. So we embarked on that little process. We invited all of our friends. We introduced it several times. And everybody was excited. We shared the data. We passed out our PowerPoint presentation so that they could take it and, again, share it with their friends. So we would begin to get women to be thinking about, where do we want to go with this? And how can we create an environment that is supportive for women to move ahead in whatever industry they're in? And more importantly, to introduce STEM careers to young women or girls early on so that they will see that these things can be achieved and they, you know, can get into these particular positions. I think one of the hardest things to do for young women is to look at an organization or, you know, a career path and not see yourself. If you don't see women doing that, you may not necessarily think that it would be good for you. So we wanted to create awareness and heighten people's excitement about the possibility for the future. And so we began to think about broadening our network. We, in Greater Portland, we partnered with some of our colleagues in the insurance industry, as well as like the Girl Scouts and the healthcare folks that we knew, educators, and we just started to broaden the network. We had several networking events where we would have a guest speaker. We had an architect from New York City who came to Lewiston, Maine as a young woman and created a high-end handbag factory and retail network. And she was fascinating to listen to. She had a great story. So we had her as a keynote speaker. We had a speaker. We had, you know, sort of a networking session, but we did everything at the end of a workday in just enough time so women could get home, get kids off the bus, do activities. So we really focused it on the needs of women in our area. The next program we had was, it was a more of an educational program to introduce women to the difference between coaching versus mentoring. There is a big difference. And we hit on sponsorship a little bit. And the gift at that session was that once the presentation was over, we began our networking session and we set it up such that everybody would not talk to the people that they know. So that was the idea. Don't talk to the people you know, your friends, your colleagues. I know you want to see them, but find somebody who you don't know, introduce yourself, talk about what you do, and make that connection. Because at some point, I believe that a time will come when you will need them for support or they will need you. And now you've made that connection.
And it's interesting. I mean, I think that's such a great aspect of this, because going outside of your comfort zone is difficult. And what you just asked a room full of people to do, to go up to a stranger and introduce themselves and talk about themselves, that's not an easy feat, even for people who have been in the business world for decades. And it's putting yourself out there and thinking, will this person like me? Will they like what I do? Will they think it's interesting? Will they find me boring? But, I think one of the great quotes is, nothing of value is easy. And kind of pushing yourself outside of that comfort zone is so important for your own growth. And you have value that the other person is going to find interesting and helpful. And when we're all working together and saying, I don't exactly understand everything about what you've just described to me, but I have this great friend who I know is going to think this is so interesting. Let me connect the two of you. And that's another aspect of this networking and the programs that you're describing that I think have so much value. And to open it up to another generation of future leaders and showing people in your community, these people exist and are accessible and are available to you is, I think, so important for our children. And I say our children very broadly for the next generation of the people who will be taking over the world. I mean,
so true.
We're talking a lot about positive things, and I think after the break, I want to talk about whether or not you met resistance and what that looked like. So we're going to take a really quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetty.
And I'm Pete McVetty from McVetty's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Catherine Lamson, Senior Vice President and Chief Administrative Officer at MEMC. And we're discussing the work that MEMC's done to create an effective mentorship program. And specifically, prior to the last break, we spent a lot of time talking about the Million Women Mentor Program and the work that Catherine and her team did to kind of make that a possibility here in Maine and what that programming looks like. And the fact that one of the things that we need to keep at top of mind is the importance of making sure that future leaders recognize or understand that there's a path forward in a career that they might be interested in, and specifically focusing on STEM careers. I mean, Catherine, you've talked a lot about successes and the way that this has been received, I think, by the community. But we all know that nothing of value is easy, right? Did you experience any hurdles in this process?
So, as I said earlier, I am the only woman on my team. And I found that introducing this Million Women Mentors movement was challenging for me. I had done an employee engagement survey. And one of the things that always came out, and in not just on the survey, but in conversations with employees and so forth, that people were interested in mentoring or having a mentor. They wanted to be a mentee if they were looking to advance their careers and so forth. So I knew that was important. When I presented it, my two colleagues who were with me from the very beginning were champions for a mentoring program and did a lot of background work to find the appropriate program for our organization. We wanted to launch it with women. We wanted to pilot it to make sure that it worked well. We actually selected some software to utilize in order to make the matches, because that's the hardest thing, is making the match, because we didn't think that we would be the most appropriate people to match people up because we didn't know them well enough. And this particular software came with an algorithm that matched people based on their interests. And so we tried it. And I did not plan on being part of the original pilot group, but in the end, I was. I'm so glad I did. Oh, it was the best experience. And I have a mentee right now. In fact, I just heard from her this morning. We've been working together. We talk about careers. We talk about what she wants in the future. We talk about great leadership examples, things to try. We talk about kids and families and holidays and we talk about everything, finding balance, what to do during this COVID. We've talked about everything. But the program itself had about 24 pairs. 12 pairs, 24 people. And we did it for 6 months and then we did an evaluation. And we had check-in meetings on a periodic basis. I think that all of the pairs in the pilot program are still together because the relationship was really well. And I will tell you, the matching, which I have to admit at the onset, I was a little worried about, the matching was perfect. Almost every person, whether you were a mentor or a mentee, commented on how well matched they were with their other person. So that worked out really well. The challenges that we had at that time were that this is a Million Women Mentors movement, but the guys wanted to get in on it too. And we really wanted to have an opportunity to try it out and get some women to be thinking about their own careers and how to move themselves forward, the things that they needed to do for themselves to position themselves for the opportunity in the future. So that was really the pushback. How are we going to incorporate the men into this? And other than that, I think my organization is so supportive and a little bit progressive on leadership, on career development and career pathing, that it worked out really well for us. The pandemic hit, and that was a that was a bit of a challenge, because as this pilot is, you know, working very well, the pandemic hits, how do you introduce this program to an entire organization from, you know, that's covering the East Coast, basically? I will say that our virtual work process was so great because of our IT initiatives were well underway before the pandemic hit. We were well positioned technologically with equipment, with software, with support and so forth, that going virtual for us was probably a challenge for the first week while everybody figured out how their headset worked at home, or, you know, some basic things.
The things that we all experienced.
Exactly.
I think in the first week I had 4 different locations saying, this isn't going to last long. I'll be at the dining room table for now. And then there were a few weeks in the guest bedroom until I finally looked at my partner and I said, I think this is longer term. We need to figure out a new solution.
Exactly. So we decided that if we could do virtual work and everybody's remote, we might as well do virtual mentoring. So we kicked off the program internally, and we have over 100 new people involved. So another 50 pairs, and men and women working together, being supportive. And I think that we will continue to have the program. We're continually looking at how to make it better. I will tell you, my mentee and I, we live in the same town. How ridiculous is that? not expected, but we live in the same town. So when it's a nice day and we're having one of our mentor meetings, sometimes we go on walk and talk meetings, because it gets us outside, and you can do the social distancing, you can wear the mask, we can get some exercise. And frankly, the conversation is exhilarating, as is the walk. So it works out well for us. So people are being really creative with those things. We've been in it since January, and I think it's going well. I think we are going to continue to expand it. New people will get involved. I think the relationships, for the most part, are long-term. That's what I'm seeing. That's what I'm hearing. I don't have the data to support that, other than nobody's left the program. So I think it's working well.
And this is the second round. I mean,
it is.
When you say that, you know, unexpectedly you're in the same town, I mean, is that type of data that was sought during the course of the matching program, where the algorithm might have played a role there? Or was it more, you like cats or dogs, or where, like, on the weekends, what do you enjoy doing in your spare time? I mean, what kind of questions were we looking at?
There was not a lot of personal information. It was very career oriented. So what things are you most interested in? Are you interested in career advancement? Are you interested in strategic planning? Are you interested in leadership fundamentals? So they were all really career-based kinds of questions, and you selected what you were most interested in or what you could offer. If you wanted to be a mentor, I can offer leadership. I can offer strategic planning guidance. I can offer career planning. So everybody had something different, and you were allowed to say, do you want to be a mentor? Did you want to be a mentee? Or frankly, did you want to be both? We have a waiting list right now because we were thinking long and hard about whether we intervene and match people up if the software didn't match them, and we've decided to wait and let the software match them. So we continually look at that and try to make sure that everybody has a partner.
Now, do you have a lot of individuals who are both mentor and mentee who maybe are both giving and receiving advice, maybe as to different elements?
I would probably say it's not a large percentage, but maybe 20 or so.
Very interesting.
Catherine, I mean, I feel like we could do a 3-hour show just on this topic. But at the same time, we're at that time where we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBRadio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Catherine Lamson, Senior Vice President and Chief Administrative Officer at MEMC. And today we've been discussing the work that MEMC has done to create an effective mentorship program. We spent a portion of the show talking about the Million Women Mentor Program and how it came to be front and center to Catherine, and then the implementation within her organization, getting leadership support, and then how this program has organically grown over the course of the last year, and even despite the pandemic, going from a pilot program to a program that has over doubled in size. I mean, Catherine, when we talk about this topic, about mentorship, about growth, about helping the next generation succeed, one of the things I sometimes hear from senior leaders, and I think it's really demoralizing, but I hear it still, is it was tough for me and I had to battle to get to the place in which I'm at now. The younger generation needs to experience that same battle in order to achieve the success. What would your response be to that type of statement?
Well, I have to say that some of those things really did happen, but times have changed and the world has changed. And, you know, just because, you were held back and you didn't have an opportunity, I don't think that's the reason to hold somebody else back. And let's think about the future of our organizations. Won't our organizations be better with folks that want to do the work that needs to be done? The business of the business is still important. And this is a great way to enhance the leadership in your organization, to find the best talent, the absolute best talent that's available for your organization to take you to the next level. Everybody wants to be in business for the long term. We all want to be profitable. We all want to see the culture of our organization be successful, to be collegiate, to be supportive. And frankly, in the end, people will all achieve and you'll have a very, very successful organization. If we don't do this, women are not going to get ahead. They're going to struggle. I think we still need sponsorship. I think there are those women in organizations who have had it tough getting to where they need to be. But again, times have changed. We need to open the door. We need to sponsor younger women, other women, students, interns, residents. We need to sponsor them, get them into our organization, find the best person for the job that needs to be done. I think this is a great way to do it. I think when you have more women in leadership positions, because frankly, we don't hold those positions now, I think that we will have more diversity of thought. We will have the opportunity to be more supportive of careers, of changes, creativity. If you think about business, sometimes the most creative things come out of conversations, networking, mentoring, sponsoring. It's a challenge. It is truly a challenge as we move forward. So we need to get good at this. And I think women need to see themselves. They need to look up and see that other women have made it and that we are standing there holding the door open so they can get through. The glass ceiling doesn't have to be there. We hold the key to change that.
Thank you so much. I mean, I feel like during the course of our conversation, my mind has gone in so many different directions about all the great things that we each can be doing within our organization. And you've given me so many really good takeaways, those two or three sentence or word takeaways. And in my mind, I keep thinking that there's generations of women ahead of me who had created doors and brick walls where a door didn't exist. And there's some organizations where, you know, you create that door, you walk through it, and then you shut it and say, find a new door, make your own door. But I mean, I hope that we're getting to a place in which we have more and more women in positions of leadership like yourself who are holding that door open and who are saying, join me on the other side of this wall, because I think it's so important. And programs such as the one that you and your team have created there at Memec and has organically grown based off of kind of the creation of this is so important. So thank you so much for being a guest today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening and we'll see you next week. Stay tuned for the HR Tip of the Week.
And now, your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Hi, this is Doug Currier from Verrill. Today, I want to talk for a moment about commission plans. Does your company pay some of your employees on a commission basis? Usually, things go well until the employment relationship ends, and that's when the trouble starts. The court determines that an employee was not paid all the commissions to which they were entitled, then the employee will get his damages triple the amount of their claim. That's triple, plus attorney's fees. So it is really important that your commission policy plan or arrangement is crystal clear about what commissions are owed when employment ends, when they're earned, and when they're going to be paid. You get to decide what the terms will be of your commission plan, but if you're not clear about how it works, then you're asking for trouble. To further discuss structuring compensation arrangements for your employees, please contact a member of Verrill's Labor and Employment Law Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.